You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joining us on the line now is Sheriff Chuck Jenkins from Frederick County, Maryland. Good morning to you, Sheriff. Good to have you.
Good morning. Thank you.
We wanted to have you on to learn more about this this case. I mean, how what a scary case. What a lucky break that people got there in Thurmont. An 18-year-old girl apparently planning a very serious mass casualty attack against her fellow students there at Catoctin High School in Thurmont, Maryland. You know, we're very curious to know a little bit about this. We know that the dad came to school officials and then law enforcement was brought in. But what was it? Can you help us understand what it was that first alerted the dad? I think many parents want to know exactly what it was that might have triggered his concern so they would know to look for it perhaps in their own kids.
Well, I don't know prior to exactly last Thursday afternoon what prompted it, but dad actually, for whatever reason, came across this journal or diary, whichever you want to call it, and saw some things in there that were pretty alarming to him. He then went to school officials, and we launched our investigation immediately, pulled the young lady out of class just to make sure that everything going forward, that there was no threat posed based on what we started to find out. So I don't know what prompted Dad to look, but Dad, thank God that he looked into this diary. And I got to tell you, I can't thank him enough for stepping up and doing the right thing.
It was must have been a very hard decision for a dad to go to authorities and tell what he had found about his own daughter.
Yes, because the consequences down the line, you know, we don't know where it's going to go as far as the criminal charges after she gets the help that she needs. I mean, let's start now. That's the most important thing. Get this young lady the help that she needs in as far as mental health services.
And that may be the benefit. The silver lining in this entire story is that instead of her being incarcerated after the fact, at least maybe now she can get some mental health care before anything was allowed to happen. Were there any names, any particular targets named in this diary?
No, no particular targets, no one named, but the intent was to go into the school and orchestrate an event which included the shooting of other students, explosive devices, planting bombs, if you will. We went into the home, and again, cooperative parents allowed us into the home to conduct a search. We found bomb-making materials. We found the means to put bombs together. We found a shotgun, shotgun ammunition, a hacksaw, which was going to be used to saw the barrel of the shotgun off, knowing that potentially would create more injury and havoc up there with the sawed-off shotgun. So this young lady had planned things out, unfortunately, and, you know, I really truly believe the intent was there. Thank goodness we didn't have to deal with an aftermath.
Was she working alone? Was it just her?
As far as we know, and listen, we've looked, we've talked to, we've interviewed friends, coworkers, fellow students, anybody who associated with her. We've looked at her social media. There's no indication whatsoever that there was anyone else involved or that anyone else even knew this was going to happen.
So what
was being planned?
I'm sorry, Sheriff. What was the motivation? What was driving her to take such action? What was she angry about?
We simply don't know that. Again, going back to what I read and the investigators read and concluded in the journal, a lot of personal frustrations, a lot of anger, a lot of, I think, self-hate, things that prompted her to have these thoughts. She actually referred to Columbine. She referred to Newtown at one point in this journal. And this had been planned. The first date, the first journal entry that we saw was back in December 16th of last year, 2016. So this has been planned out for several months at least.
And thank goodness that it got that somehow mom or dad got word of this before the carryout date, which what, April 5th. Okay.
April 5th. And again, Dad just, I guess by happenstance, curious, found this journal, looked it up, started reading, and saw these things that were very alarming.
What was the reaction at the school when Dad walks in and starts telling them this?
Well, I didn't get to talk to the principal yet. He's a good friend of mine, actually. I don't know what his immediate reaction, other than I'm sure shock and just total, just total shock, I guess, nothing else.
Right.
Yeah, but it did
because
have it did.
This young lady was actually an honor student, also involved in, oddly enough, in the law enforcement program at Career Tech Center at Frederick Community College.
No kidding.
what I want to, with this entire story, first of all, is so I think it's shocking because it is a young lady instead of boys. We expect this behavior from boys. We've almost come to expect it, not from a girl. So I think right there. But for parents who have this idea of, oh, I don't want to violate my child's trust, so I don't want to go in their room. I don't want to look around. No, look around. You might find a shotgun under the bed with a hacksaw.
You might find anything. I'm a believer in this. If you're living under my roof, you have no constitutional right to privacy.
My father told us that all the time. When you could pay your own bills, then you can have your own room that I can't go into. We want to switch it up.
Fourth Amendment does not apply in my home.
Exactly. We also wanted to talk to you about Frederick County opting to help federal immigration officials now. And now when someone is booked into a Frederick County jail, they get a form that asks them a series of questions. But now on the forum, it also asks them, what country were you born in and what country are you a citizen or national of? What prompted this change?
Well, believe it or not, we've been doing this for almost, 9 years in Frederick County. I chose in 2007 to work toward a partnership with ICE, which allowed us to enter into an agreement, the 287G program, which we got involved with, and it's been working very well for 9 years. We have, during the course of those 9 years, placed over 1,300 people who have committed crimes in our county and were in this country illegal. They have been placed into removal processes. So we have taken criminals and kept criminals off the streets.
That's fantastic.
And we saw the Attorney General. We're going to talk about more about this in just a moment. You say yesterday that they're going to go after sanctuary cities and go after some of the law enforcement grants that the Department of Justice hands out. Now, and you know, look, you're in compliance, and you believe that it makes a lot of sense to work with the Department of Justice and ICE on these matters. But if you were to lose, are there Department of Justice grants that if you lost them, it would have an impact on your sheriff's office?
Oh, absolutely. There are Department of Justice burn JAG grants. There are body armor grants, funding that comes to replace body armor, all types of Homeland Security grants that we could potentially lose. The SCAP funding for jails. Every jail gets what they call a state criminal alien assistance money. Jails would lose that. We're not a very large jail, but I will tell you, every dollar we get counts. And you know what? I will say this. In working with ICE, we have been really identified as one of the model programs nationwide.
Yeah, but I guess my larger point is, I mean, even in Frederick County, which is not one of your largest jurisdictions,
sure,
but I mean, it's a major county in Maryland, that's how much is at stake to these other institutions that are saying that they are not going to comply and they're not going to cooperate with ICE.
Yeah,
well, obviously, much more funding in terms of funding, much more to your Montgomery, your PG, your Baltimore counties, your state correctional facilities. If this bill passes, which is insanity, really, if this bill passes in the state of Maryland, there's going to be so much of an impact to jails, prisons, correctional facilities.
Right.
People don't have a clue yet how this is going to affect public safety.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Sheriff Chuck Jenkins, thank you so much, and congratulations on the lucky break you got and the great work you did afterwards.
Thanks, sir. Have a good morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Join us on the line right now is Acting D.C. Police Chief Peter Newsham. Sir, it's good to have you on the show this morning. And let me just start off asking the question a lot of people are asking. When are we going to take away that acting title and just make it police chief?
Oh, yeah. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah, the council is going to vote on that in the very near future, so we'll see how that turns out.
All right. Well, good luck. I think from what I'm reading, it looks very good for your chances.
Well, thank you.
Listen, we wanted to have you on, so much to talk about, but I have to go to something that happened this week. The Attorney General of the United States says, look, if you're going to have immigration sanctuary city status in a community or in a county or in a state, as Maryland is contemplating doing right now, then you're probably going to lose some federal funding. Now, in the District of Columbia, we know very clearly, you've been on record on it, we are a sanctuary city. So are you prepared for the losses that could come?
Well, let me tell you this. You know, I have been around the city for a very long time, involved in law enforcement. I know the most important thing that you can do as a police department is build trust with your community. When you have local police officers involved in civil immigration enforcement, it impacts that trust. The trust erodes. And so it's a federal responsibility, civil immigration enforcement. I'm a true believer that if we get involved in that, it'll make us a less safe city. And we have expressed that to the federal government.
All right, can I follow up?
If the federal government decides that there's going to be some kind of financial impact on us, then, you know, we'll be able to adjust accordingly.
Let me ask you, though. I know that you, as a law enforcement officer, believe in the rule of law. And you would want, in the District of Columbia, you would want the citizenry to obey the laws that are on the books for the District of Columbia. Why then is it irresponsible for the Attorney General to ask that the police chief of the District of Columbia follow federal law?
Hey, in our major cities, our number one concern is violent crime. If we have folks that don't trust the police enough to report violent crime, or they're reluctant to come forward as witnesses in violent crimes, that impacts the city's safety.
But I'm
not the only one who feels this.
And I take your point, but the question was, don't you believe in the rule of law?
Major city chiefs recently, and collectively, we feel that civil immigration enforcement is a federal responsibility. And, you know, there are laws, but there is also, you know, we have to be concerned about violence in our city, and I don't want to do anything that's going to undercut our ability to address violence in our city.
So if someone feels more comfortable carrying in D.C. because it makes them feel safer, that's okay then, right? Because they can break that law.
I'm sorry, carrying what?
Carrying a handgun in D.C., right? Because they say, hey, it makes me feel safer. So, and I'm concerned about my safety.
Well, there are people can apply to carry a handgun in the city, and provided they meet all the qualifications,
right,
they are allowed to carry. And we do have folks in the city that do have carry permits. And as you know, folks can also apply to have a firearm in their home. So
as long as they follow the law, it's
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And
right.
So, you know,
okay.
One of the focuses, and I think you've heard me say this before, is to get the illegal firearms out of our community.
Right. Well, we understand, but
no, I understand. My point was that as long as I follow the law, then I can do that. But what you're saying is it's okay to not follow the law because other people are not doing it. And I guess that's where the disconnect is for us, is that, you know, it's hard to look at for us personally. And this is not a knock on you, but it's hard for me to say, wow, you know, he's in charge of enforcing the law, but he's going to pick which laws he chooses to enforce.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not about picking the laws that I'm choosing to enforce. It's delineating who has responsibility for enforcing those laws.
Okay.
Civil immigration enforcement is 100% a federal responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My responsibility is to make sure that we have a safe city. And I can't do anything in my heart of hearts that's going to impact the safety of this city.
Right.
And I think that the large majority of the folks who live in this city respect that.
Right. And then that'll, I guess we'll see how this plays out.
No.
But here, I want to give you the opportunity to clear something up. There has been, there's an Instagram post that went viral talking about missing persons, most of them being young girls, Black and Latina girls, and the claims of it being underreported. But from what I understand with this, that's not really the truth. It's perception of what the problem is, because there's a lot of social media posting now from the police department, which I have to think, I say, is a good thing. So is it the perception that there are more young minority girls going missing, or is it reality?
Yeah, I think a lot of this has been cleared up, quite frankly. I looked at the clippings this morning on this issue, and what happened was we brought in new leadership to our Youth and Family Services Division in December. And this new commander, very talented young woman, went over there. She took a look at the way we were handling missing persons cases, and she used the tool of social media to push these cases out on social media. And what it did was it drew a lot of attention to the fact that we do have a lot of young people that go missing in our city.
Mm-hmm.
We end up locating about 99% of those folks or those kids who go missing. And I think the awareness issue that has been raised is, first of all, why are they going missing in the first place? Is there something going on at home,
mm-hmm.
Or are they just being rebellious young people? And I think that's an important issue that we all need to kind of focus on. And the second thing, and the thing which has been good for us, is that by putting them out on social media, we're able to reunite them with their families much quicker than we had in the past. So I think in two regards, it has been helpful.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of the fact it kind of created a stir out there, the two things that we get is we get our kids reunited with a responsible adult much quicker. And then now we also have an awareness where people are focusing on, you know, how can we help these kids and prevent this thing from being as large as it is in our city.
Well, I wanted to give credit where credit is due there for getting this stuff up on social media, because I do think that's important, and I think that that's a really great step in the right direction. So kudos to you on that.
Well, thank you.
And let me ask you about recruitment, because you really need more cops on the street, don't you?
We do. You know, we're in pretty good shape right now. The force is over 3,800 at this point. We are in the process of trying to bring on about 360 per year.
Wow.
The concern is that we do have a number of officers that are eligible to retire. When somebody is eligible, they don't necessarily leave. I think if I can improve working conditions here at MPD, I think a lot of those folks will choose to stay and be with us through this retirement bubble. Time will tell. But right now, I feel very comfortable that we're going to be able to hire enough to maintain our staffing through this difficult period.
All right.
Good. That's good.
Listen, Chief, we really appreciate you joining us. And hopefully the next time you come back, we will be able to eliminate the acting part and just call you Chief.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on. You guys have a great day.
Really, really great to have you. Thanks
Thank
a lot.
Thank you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
And join us on the line right now, Jim Garrity, senior political correspondent for National Review. Good morning to you, Jim. How are you?
Brian, Mary, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, so Friday we saw this healthcare thing fall apart, and President Trump tweeted over the weekend, here's what he said. Democrats are smiling in D.C. that the Freedom Caucus, with help for the Club for Growth and Heritage, helped save Planned Parenthood and Obamacare. He very much was with the Speaker of the House on this replacement package, and he is throwing rocks at the Freedom Caucus. So what happened here, and who's really at fault for this thing, you know, not getting across the goal line?
Sure. It doesn't really lend itself well to simple explanations.
It doesn't, yeah.
You know, best way of adding up the 30-some Republicans that said they were firm no's, yeah, about 10 to 12 of them were in the Freedom Caucus, about 10 to 12 of them were kind of in the moderate wing, and about 10 to 12 of them were kind of in the middle of the party, that there was something for almost everybody to object to in this bill. This was a bill that was constructed to try to make everybody happy or to please everyone, and in the end, it really didn't please much of everyone. I feel like we ought to point, you know, considering how everybody's now kicking the bill around like it's a soccer ball, and basically, you know, victory has 1,000 fathers, defeat is an orphan.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of accusations of paternity flying around Washington these days. But the gist is, look, so here's the bill did do a few things well, right? I mean, it did reduce the deficit and debt, reduce the spending. It would bring down premiums in the long run. Unfortunately, they would still go up for the next 3 years. And when you're up for re-election in 2018, the idea of people paying higher premiums next year doesn't sound all that appetizing. Probably the best part of the bill was a lot of flexibility to the states on Medicaid, but that doesn't really affect. There are a whole bunch of people that doesn't really affect, and they kind of just shrug at that. So, you know, you had something that was this amalgamation, and it probably didn't have a very good chance of getting through the Senate as is. There were a bunch of House Senate Republicans who were wary about it. So if you're a House Republican, why would you take a risky vote? Why would you take a vote that your constituents are not going to like that much for something that's not going to pass? You know, it's one thing to stick your neck out if you're going to actually get it to be enacted.
Yeah, I see your point, mm-hmm.
But here's my question is, if this was something that was an amalgamation, which in my brain, like, everybody gets a little bit of something because it's better to have a little bit of bread as opposed to no bread at all. So everybody gets a little bit of something, which is the way to compromise. Why couldn't it have been sold better to the American public? Have it be explained. And this has been my question is, why didn't President Trump get out there and do what he does best, which is talk to the American people and explain it to us?
That is a really good question, and one of the accusations that's flying around here. And I think it's a fair one, because you think about how long the Democrats took to pass Obamacare. It was more than a year. It did not pass in 2009. and they had everything, every setback imaginable, including the Scott Brown election up in Massachusetts. You know, the administration was determined to get this done. There were a bunch of House Democrats who voted for this, knowing that it was probably going to cost them re-election in 2010, and it certainly did. I think it's safe to say that repealing Obamacare is not as high a priority. It is not something Republicans are willing to jump on a grenade for,
right,
the way that House Democrats were back in 2009, 2010. Now, one of the things that is probably a really good anecdote from my former colleague, Tim Alberta, who's now with Politico, describes a meeting between the House Freedom Caucus at the White House, and they're trying to explain to Trump why they have problems with the bill. They're going into the essential health benefits that are described, that are required of insurance companies. They go into the community rating provision that limited what insurers could change, could charge. And Trump says, I'm going to clean it up because we're on, you know, public radio and I don't want it to offend anyone. Forget about the little stuff, except he didn't say stuff. Let's focus on the big picture here. Now, to the House Freedom Caucus, this isn't little stuff.
No.
Right.
This is important. This is to them what they think is kind of really the key part of what a good reform bill would do. And the two biggest things, when you talk to the average conservative and say, hey, what do you want to see out of health care reform? They generally would say tort reform, i.e. they don't like the idea of ambulance chasing lawyers going after doctors and making things more expensive. And the second thing they say is selling across state lines. They feel like if you have more insurance companies selling you plans, you have more competition and prices will come down. Neither one of those can go through the Senate through the reconciliation process. You need 60 votes for that. At this point, there's no indication that any Senate Democrat wants anything to do with anything repealing Obamacare. So the administration's claim was, look, we're going to do this in three stages. This is the first stage. The second stage comes from Tom Price of the Department of Health and Human Services. He's going to repeal some of the regulations. And then in this third stage, we'll get to that good stuff that you really want. Now, if you don't get to that third stage, then two of the big things that conservatives thought were going to bring down prices never happened.
Right. Mm-hmm. I get your point. Listen, I want to ask you, though, a lot of people said Ryan needs to step down. And I say, oh, really? Well, then who would you choose? Because as I recall, the last time they were looking for a Speaker of the House, they couldn't find anybody that wanted the job.
Yeah,
Ryan didn't want it.
Exactly. Basically, who you see as, I think, by the way, as far as communication skills go, I think Ryan is about as good as it gets in the House. If you're a huge fan of Kevin McCarthy, and for any members of the McCarthy family who are listening right now, I'm sure he's a perfectly nice man, but I don't see him going in and blowing the doors off the place. I know that some figures like Louie Gohmert are big fans of the Breitbart.com crowd. Let's face it, Louie Gohmert is not going to be the next Speaker of the House. You know, I don't really think – the problem was partially with the legislation. Could Ryan have done a better job, or should Ryan have picked up that deep down this wasn't going to get 218 votes quicker? Yeah, he probably could have. He's got egg in his face as much as anybody in this process. But I don't think – well, if we just get person X in there, then this process will run smoothly. There is no better person X. You know, the theoretical all-powerful speaker who can get stuff through by snapping his fingers just doesn't exist, and you got to stop pretending that there's some – invisible, unspecified, better alternative out there who will make everything all better.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Well, we have to leave it right there. Jim Garrity, it's always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you.
Always enjoy it, Brian. Take care.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
It is maddening when you run into these people who are driving too slow in the left lane.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it is against the law, but it seems that the law is so rarely enforced. And that would change under one piece of legislation that's being proposed by Frederick County Delegate William Folden of Maryland, who says, look, it's time for this to be an official a crackdown. We need to have a firmer law about this, and we need to make sure that the law is enforced. He's proposing a piece of legislation in the House of Delegates in the state of Maryland. And it has passed there, apparently, and now awaits a vote in the Senate. And this is one of those issues where it really matters. Joining us now on the line is Maryland Delegate William Folden.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing fine. So we know that driving in the left-hand lane is, you know, it's not supposed to be the lane you sit in. How does this law change that, since we already know that that's something that you can get ticketed for?
Oh, well, actually, in the state of Maryland, you can't be ticketed for driving in the left lane.
You cannot. So there you go. So it will now allow police officers to ticket people who sit in the passing lane.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. We're not looking to make another revenue source for the state of Maryland. This is simply looking to gain voluntary compliance from the motoring public in the state of Maryland. That is one of five states that have weak or no law, enforceable law, about left lane drivers. And the other states, now mind you, Maryland has the second worst traffic congestion in the country, but there's 39 other states that have some form of this law. Maryland's one of five that do not. The other four are Alaska, South Dakota, North Carolina, and Puerto Rico. So I'm not sure, I'm just kind of thinking outside the box here, but I'm pretty sure those states don't have similar traffic patterns like we have. So I don't know what our problem is or why we're so slow to get to this.
All right, so your measure, how did it do in the House?
The measure, it was definitely a hotly debated issue on the House floor, and it passed 73-66.
Really? 73? Well, that was a lot closer than I thought it would be. What are the chances now in the Maryland Senate?
I mean, I think we had our hearing yesterday at 1 o'clock. There was a lot of good dialogue about it, a lot of good Q&A. There's interest in it, which is good. There's always going to be hesitation on some members' part about, you know, what this means for as far as giving law enforcement another tool. And, you know, in our current age that we live in, unfortunately, we seem to be a little more reluctant to give law enforcement the measures or tools they need to facilitate, in this instance, a better, more fluid traffic pattern. Because this isn't about anything other than encouraging driver courtesy. We're all taught in driver's ed, hey, the left lane's for passing, you know, and then move back over. You pass to the left, move back over. But it's never been an enforceable standard in the state of Maryland. And we've all seen it where this causes bottlenecks in traffic where two people or several cars will just stay side by side at the lower end. And the speed limit, if we're being honest with each other, it's become more or less a guide. The only time it's a hard, fast number is when you've gone so far above it that you've been stopped by a police officer.
Right.
That's a hard, fast number because it's on your citation.
And I should mention, you are a former sheriff deputy and a former police officer before you made the move into politics. And I'm sort of curious as to how you think from a law enforcement standpoint, will it be enforced? Is it something, like you said, you're not really looking for a lot of tickets to be written, just hope that the presence of the law causes people to do the right thing? Or do you think that the police will actually get out there and try to enforce this law?
Well, actually, let me just be sure that we're clear on this. I'm still a police officer.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Legislature. So I'm the only active police officer in our legislature.
Yeah.
This would minimize the bottlenecking. Again, the best thing about this bill is that there would be signs posted up along the shoulders of the roadway, like when I went to Texas last summer with my wife, and it said on the shoulder of the roadway, there were signings that said, left lane passing only. And only was underlined. You know, and that's what we in police work call a clue. So I probably shouldn't be hanging out in that left lane,
right?
Unless I'm passing someone, and then I can simply move back over. And it didn't matter where I was. I didn't have to be from Texas. The sign was very clear, and the message was clear. And again, this lowers driver frustration. This is, you know, it lowers aggressive driving behavior, so we don't have drivers darting across two lanes because they're frustrated, and then darting back across two lanes and as close as they can to that slower driver because, you know, I'm going to show that person that was in the way, you know, that I'm upset with them, and, you know, thereby lowering incidents of road rage. I mean, Frederick County just had a road rage incident 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, that resulted in a shooting.
Was it involved with something like this?
It was where they were jockeying around and doing this type of effect, yes, sir.
All right.
See, I drive in many states where this is the law, and I don't see enforcement of it. I don't know anyone who has ever been ticketed for hanging out in the left-hand lane. Now, I have seen on some state roads, state troopers come barreling down the left-hand lane, and they are just clearing everybody out. They just clear everybody out of that left-hand lane. They get behind somebody, and they put their lights on, and they clear them out. And then when you can't see the cop anymore, the exact same suspects get right back into the left-hand lane. So I don't know.
They probably have Maryland tags on.
Well, how do you enforce it?
Yeah, well, how do you enforce it in a place on a roadway like I-270 or on the Beltway?
And that's really another issue in and of itself. I mean, Maryland doesn't have the money to be dumping into the infrastructure to add extra lanes. So we've got to kind of think outside the box to find better ways to encourage driver courtesy as well as a more fluid traffic pattern. So that's what this bill does. It simply allows for a more, you know, encouraging driver, courteous drivers, or a more courteous behavior to get back to what we were taught at driver's ed, which was to move back over.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this isn't something where you're going to see somebody running radar in the middle of the lane, and then they're going to be like, oh, that car is going perfectly the speed limit, and then look at all those cars behind them. Well, they should, that person needs to be cited. That's not the intent of this bill at all. This bill would be, if we see a large volume of traffic and there's a large bottlenecking in the one area, this would be something of, you know, the signage is really the key point, that it's a reminder out there. But it gives some type of teeth that we currently don't have. We teach it in driver's ed, but we don't have teeth. And again, this is like many of our laws in our traffic books. A lot of them don't get enforced, but they're meant for voluntary compliance. They're there so that people will at least have the reminders and understand that, you know what, I can be stopped for this, impeding the normal and prudent flow of traffic, even if it's slightly above the speed limit. So maybe I should just be a little more courteous and move to the right to allow others to go by. And they go by at their own peril, because I'm pretty sure about, I don't know about you guys, but when I went through elementary school, we had hall monitors that had their little,
I was one.
Okay, well, those were clearly the cool kids then. So, and then what happens is, those kids were the ones that told you to slow down in the hallway. Well, we're adults now, and we're driving vehicles that are 3,200 pounds or more. We don't need someone sitting there regulating the speed limit on their own accord. We have laws for that. We have law enforcement for that. We live in a hyper-changing environment where people are busy with multiple other things at the same time, and you know, this is really just another tool to kind of give some teeth to it, give us some merits, but bring on awareness that, you know what, move over. And then the other part of this would be is that it would bleed over into the two-lane roadways, because this would only be enforceable on three-lane roadways or wider.
All right. But, well, listen, we wish you good luck. I mean, one thing we know from talking to people on this radio station from time to time is this is a big issue with a lot of people. That's a Maryland delegate, William Folden, also an active police officer.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
So a young woman named Bree told her tale of woe on Twitter, which I'm impressed because it's 140 characters at a pop, so she's got the patience of Job, about how she found out that her boyfriend was cheating on her because she drove his girlfriend, apparently, to his apartment because she's also an Uber driver. Yeah. Dude, don't buy a lottery ticket. Do not buy a lottery ticket, dude.
That's an incredible stroke of bad luck.
You have no luck. Vanessa in Alexandria, you are on Mornings on the Mall with Brian and Mary. Good morning, Vanessa. How'd you find out?
Hi. I showed up at my boyfriend's house, who I suspected was cheating, and on a Sunday morning to deliver a birthday gift for him. So not only did the son look suspicious, but he kept looking towards the bedroom. So I decided to go in and ask for a cup of water. While my boyfriend left the front door to get the water, I just walked on in and found not only the girlfriend sleeping over in his T-shirt, but the kids were there as well.
Oh, my.
So they knew. So the kids knew.
I don't know what they thought I was to him or she was, but it was just a really bad situation. So I just left and I said, you can have him. I'm done. And he has the audacity to chase me out the door, calling me names.
Oh, my gosh.
And then it gets worse. He jumps into my car and tried to say that I hit him and keyed my car. So, of course, I have to then, before I go to church, go file a police report. So in the event that he tries to prosecute me for allegedly hitting him.
Oh, my.
And the guy was just psychotic. We beat it for like 4 years, so I finally said, that's it, done.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. What bothers me about your story, Vanessa, thank you so much for sharing that. Have a great weekend. What bothers me about that is when there are kids involved, you don't bring people home unless you are super, super serious about
right.
them. I'm a huge believer in that.
You know, I do have one story to share, and I don't think I've ever told this story.
I knew there was
so,
a story.
So I'm a very young man. I'm a single man, and I have moved to a new town, to a new job, and one day I get a phone call from an old girlfriend who said, hey, can I come see you? I haven't seen you in a while. Love to drive up and spend the weekend. And I said, why, sure. I wasn't dating anybody at the time. So this person shows up. had a wonderful weekend. A reunion in all the ways that one can have a reunion with a former girlfriend. And so I wake up the next morning, said former girlfriend is gone.
Mm.
And this is the day before. You don't have cell phones these days. So I started trying to figure out how I'm going to, is everything okay? I don't know. She's just gone. And I waited, for enough time for her to have gotten back to where she lived. And I called, no answer. Couple, two or three days, I keep calling. What's going on? You know, what happened? Was it something I said?
Or didn't?
I don't know what it was, but I was trying to figure it out. Finally ended up calling this person's sister, whose number I had. And I said, hey, have you heard from X?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, yeah, she's on her honeymoon.
You drove her to the arms of another man in a sudden marriage?
Apparently she got up that morning, drove back to where she lived, and got married.
So you were a booty call?
I guess.
Oh, my gosh. You were abused, and thrown away like a towel.
I know.
That's you, poor thing.
Thank you
so much. Or was
so
that
much.
Just karma for something else previously in your lifetime? I just always wondered.
I've always wondered, what was the rest of that story?
You never found out?
I never found out.
Oh, I want to know the rest.
I wish I had the rest of the story.
Ain't no way to hide your
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM, WMAL.